Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 92, recorded October 21st, 2010. The 6800 is here. Welcome to This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by the legendary Ryan Shrout of PC Perspectives. Actually, it's his podcast. Ryan, are you there, man?
I am here. You keep calling me legendary, and eventually somebody's going to call you on it and actually want to know how that's the case, and I'd have to lie and all this kind of stuff. But nonetheless, I am indeed here.
I think it's good. I think I'm just sending the love to PCPer.com. I also want to give a shout out to my number one fan, Jonathan Lucas. Dude, I'm glad you're out there, and I'll do my best keeping on being a fat pig just to tick you off because I'm useless. I loved that email, dude. You made
my
week.
People on the internet fun? God, they're
people
fun.
On the internet are awesome, especially anonymous ones, Jonathan Lucas. Twitch at twit.tv actually is the place where we get our emails. We'd love to see them. We have some really good stuff to talk about from the email department, but I think everybody's all excited, except for, of course, people who hate Apple, and there's a lot of people out there who hate Apple. So we'll just spend no more than 20 minutes on this. The MacBook Air, Awesome Engineering, or POS. If you haven't seen it, go to ifixit.com. They have a complete teardown of the MacBook Air 11-inch model. I want to know how they got one so fast to tear it down. I think
you can buy them in the stores today.
Oh, they're in the stores today? So in other words, I mail ordered one yesterday for my wife for no reason.
Well, did you order one with a four gigs of memory?
Yes.
Okay, they only have the 2 gigs of memory option in the store, apparently. So
good to know. I usually hate doing Apple memory upgrades, but once I saw what the case – well, let's talk about this, right? So
yeah.
The case on the MacBook Air is fascinating, right? They're doing their billet style, nibbled out of solemn aluminum CNC milled case. It's fantastically thin. It's a nice looking piece of hardware, right? Whether you love or hate Apple, it's an interesting piece of structural engineering on it. And they are working really hard to lock down. The case is only accessible by removing a bunch of what basically amount to 5-point Torx bits. I think the iFixit guys actually sanded down some screwdrivers to jam into the 5-bit Torx security Torx bits there. The SSD, which a bunch of people were talking with me online on Twitter yesterday about, is not – everybody thought that – at first we thought the SSD was soldered to the motherboard. Turns out it has what looks by all counts to be a proprietary connector to the motherboard, which so basically Apple A doesn't want you upgrading anything, and B doesn't want you to be able to put in off the shelf parts, or maybe couldn't fit them off the shelf parts into the case format. So buy the biggest hard drive you can afford now, and probably buy as much memory as you can, because opening this thing is going to be a pain in the butt.
Well, I think I know the memory is actually soldered onto the board though, right? SSD is not technically, even though it's a completely custom proprietary whatever SSD unit. But I'm looking, I think on the second page, am I looking at it? Yeah, on the second page, the logic board actually has the Elpida RAM soldered onto the board. So you don't get to upgrade that.
You know, it really is just like a netbook, Steve. At least it's funny because some people are saying, like, way to go, Apple. You've taken a netbook and made it twice as expensive. But the reality is you have a decent processor. You've got a decent amount of RAM. You're not crippling the operating system the way most netbooks are. But yeah, I thought it was interesting, right? Was it last week or the week before we were talking about NVIDIA having completely had a falling out with Apple? And look at that, NVIDIA GeForce 320M graphics. What's the story behind that little reunion, Ryan?
So the reason for that is what Apple cannot do now is use Intel integrated graphics. They simply can't do it because they have built support for OpenCL into their operating system, and no NVIDIA integrated graphics solutions support OpenCL, which is it's like a GPU programming. It's a programming language that allows a developer to access both the CPU and GPU in the same program fairly easily. Now, NVIDIA's GPUs do support OpenCL. Now, when they moved to the new Core i3, Core i5 MacBooks that we saw released a couple of months ago, I guess now, they dropped NVIDIA from those because they're using discrete graphics solutions. Right, so they could use either an NVIDIA or an ATI discrete chip in there, right? So even if they're using NVIDIA in some and ATI in others, you know, they have that option because they can use a discrete graphics chip in this size of a machine in this tiny little area. And if you look at the PCB, it's impressive just how compact and how small it is. You know, adding a third logic processor to this would make it incredibly complicated. So they're using a Core 2 Duo processor. I believe this is the only MacBook now left that uses a Core 2. I think maybe the really, really, really cheap regular MacBook does. And if it does, it still has this chipset. And it's an NVIDIA integrated chipset. So it has the memory controller functionality, the Southbridge controller functionality, and the integrated graphics all on this one chip. So really, This is the same hardware that they've had in the previous generation of MacBook Pros already, but now they have shrunk it down small enough that they can put it in this form factor, and they don't have anything yet they can shrink down to this size without using that chipset.
So that's why they used the Core 2 Duo instead of using the Core i3 or the Core i5. I also don't think the Core i3 or i5 offer much of a thermal or a performance advantage over a Core 2 Duo on a lot of levels.
They offer some performance advantages, but they don't have the CULV goodness built into them yet. Keep in mind, the Core 2 Duos were out for quite a while before we got those ultra-low voltage versions. That comes after months and months and tries of tweaking the process and tweaking the processor architecture in order to run a chip at that low of voltage reliably. And they haven't really done that with the i3 or i5 yet. So that those two combinations are why we still have the Core 2 Duo processor in here and the NVIDIA integrated graphics in this as well. And chances are this design has been done for like a year or so. and they've just kind of been tweaking things here or there. At least that's kind of what I'm hearing through the NVIDIA side of things, is that I've known that NVIDIA was going to be in a new MacBook Air for a long time, and I've just kept wondering when it was going to come out. I didn't know it was going to be like this small, and it's an impressive looking device, no matter, you know, like you said earlier, you can hate Apple all you want. That's a sexy looking piece of hardware. If I could convince myself it was worth it to spend $1,400 and then put Windows, 7 on boot camp on it, but I can't convince myself that it's worth that much money. So,
no, but my wife's been using the same notebook for the last 3 years, and I think this is the upgrade. So, if I have a smile on my face next week, you'll know that the notebook was accepted graciously or gracefully, or she liked it. So, MSI GeForce GTX 460 1GB Hawk. You call this the custom everything card. What's the story on that, Ryan?
So we talked about this. We've talked about this GPU before. This is an MSI, the GTX Hawk Edition graphics card. And what's interesting about this is we know about the GTX 460 GPU. It's a great GPU, low cost, like in the $200 price range. It was also very flexible. The default clock rate is 675 megahertz. This comes clocked, it's pre-overclocked at 780 megahertz, which is a nice boost already. I was able to overclock it to like 915 megahertz.
Wow.
Without a hiccup, right? Without even really trying. So we're talking like a 40%, like 40% frequency increase, which in terms of a GPU almost directly translates into performance increases in your actual games. But you can't really say that with processors. And I say custom everything because it's a custom PCB. It's got a custom cooler on it, heat pipe design. It's got the ability to do voltage monitoring through some connections on the back, so you can do hardware voltage monitoring. It comes with really nice overclocking software that allows you to adjust the voltages, clock speeds, memory speeds, all that kind of stuff, completely in Windows, very easily. It's a really nice card, and prices are actually coming down on this thanks to the graphics cards that will be out Well, by the time you're listening to this, if this is a downloaded version, they will release the AMD Radeon 6800 series of cards, which directly competes with these types of products. And because of that friendly competition, this has gone down from like a $250 card to like a $225 card, $220 card. And that just makes it all the more compelling. So if you're looking for a graphics card in that $200 price range, that's one to keep in mind. We have a review at PCPer.com if you want, you know, like all the details and stuff. And I guess I'll just go ahead and mention here, we'll have reviews of the Radeon 6850 and the Radeon 6870 as well by the time anybody is listening to this out at the site. So, except those people who are listening live, of course. But
those people listening live will have to wait just a little bit longer. We have a really good video card question from Matt. He says, in the near future, I'm looking at upgrading my video card probably to something like a GTX 460. The last time I upgraded my video card, I went with EVGA, but only because I'd bought their brand previously. This time, I'd like to weigh my options, which is where I'm having issues understanding what the actual differences are between different vendors. Other than warranty and card cooling, is there really anything else I should be looking at when weighing my options? Well, the GeForce GTX 460, I think, would be a good case of things other than the cooler and the software bundle.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's kind of what I tell people is pick a GPU and then look at everything else. If you're looking at reference design cards, you know, they're pretty much, like, all the same. Like, for example, again, I'll just hold these up because I have them here. So this is a reference 6850. I'm allowed to show the cards. I just can't tell you what they perform like. This is a reference 6850. This is an XFX branded 6850. They run at identical clock speeds. They run identical power consumption, identical pretty much everything except, you know, a little bit different cooler look on this one than on the reference. When it comes to that, you know, price is definitely a consideration. Look at what kind of US-based support they have, you know, whether or not you're going to have to RMA immediately, or if there's a phone number you can call, if it's all email support, those types of things. XFX is a good brand for AMD cards, for NVIDIA cards. We still like BFG, or BFG's gone, EVGA, Galaxy, those types of guys. And then if you want to get into the stuff like I was mentioning on this particular GTX 460, where there's high-end cooling, voltage overclocking, really good overclocking software included in the box, you know, those types of things are other things to consider, which can sometimes make the purchasing decision a little bit complex. But I'm always been an advocate of more options rather than kind of, you know, the more options, the better, even if you have to work a little bit harder to sort through them.
Right. Options are good, especially when you're overclocking a graphics card. Speaking of options, it is a great time to buy 1 terabyte and 2 terabyte hard drives. I don't know about how it's going in Ohio, but 2 terabyte drives are selling for $100. 1 terabyte drives are selling for $50 to $60 around here because Western Digital has released the Caviar Green 3 terabytes. I can't seem to put my hands on one, even though they're supposed to be selling for $240. But they issued basically a 3 terabyte, a 2.5 terabyte, and if you buy the retail version of the cards, they're bundling adapters with them to help you get around the 2.19 terabyte issue found on most of the hardware that's out in the market these days.
Yeah, pretty much all the hardware, actually, which kind of makes it annoying, but it's I mean, it's one of those things that there's a hardware addressable, you know, issue here that you think, you know, you couldn't get past it. The card that they're bundling with this 3 terabyte drive is like a High Point controller card that sits into a PCI Express by one slot, and then it attaches basically through SATA to the Western Digital hard drive. So no speed up there. And if anything else, a hard drive guy, Alan, actually thinks that that adapter card slows down the performance of the hard drive in general. Which is a little bit of a disappointment. It's not a slow hard drive, but it's a green. It's not going to be super fast. It ends up being as fast as, say, the initial releases of the 2 terabyte hard drives.
Right.
So, again, not fast, but not as good as, you know, the 2 terabyte drives have become in terms of the Black Series. And the only thing that concerns me is that there should be the potential for speed increases here because the data density on the platters has increased dramatically. It's still only a 4-platter hard drive,
Yeah, but they're up to 750 gigabytes of platter, which is, I mean, traditionally, right, hard drives, several years ago, the whole 5400 versus 7200 RPM drive argument became pretty moot because aerial densities got so high, you'd see 5400 RPM drives that were moving so much data under the head, they'd actually be outperforming 7200 RPM drives. You know, I mean, I saw some funny threads going around about this. We're like, caviar green drives are pigs. And it's like, well, dude, don't use it for your C drive in your Windows box. Use it for NAS boxes. Use it for storage. Use it for the drive where you dump all of your, you know, audio and video files.
Yep.
Because they're still getting, I think, 121, 130 megabytes per second up and mm-hmm. Not too bad on the write speeds. We're not talking SSD speeds, but you know what? We're talking about a huge, relatively cheap hard drive. This is a storage drive, people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, I still don't recommend, like, even if you could find this card or this drive for sale today, mm-hmm. I really not recommend buying it. Because before I recommend these drives over 2 terabytes, mm-hmm. I really want motherboards to start supporting them natively. Mm. The requirement to have to add in a bus adapter card, even if it's not a big deal, it just complicates things for me.
Right.
You can't use it as a boot drive. You know, there's other, you know, and maybe
you could use it as a boot drive under 64-bit Windows 7.
right. You know, zero compatibility with Windows XP. I mean, there's just a lot of caveats to this that we've never had with a hard drive before. It was like, oh, well, they went up to 1.5 terabytes. Okay, plug it in. Oh, we went up to 2 terabytes. Okay, plug it in. You know, you could swap them in on your Drobo or swap them in with your NAS box and it didn't really matter, right?
Right. Now
all of a sudden you got to start thinking about these things. And I'm thinking, Alan, our storage guy, really thought that this was kind of like one of the sides needed to break first. Either the storage controllers on like your integrated chipsets and stuff like that needed to start supporting it before right. the hard drive manufacturers would release one, or the hard drive manufacturers would release one and then kind of force it the other way. And so we're hoping that's what's going to happen, that, you know, the Intel chipsets that come out in January with the new processor releases of Sandy Bridge will support these size drives natively. The next generation AMD chipsets will do the same thing. You know, that's what we're hoping this will drive. But if you want to play with a 3 terabyte hard drive and you want to say you have a 3 terabyte hard drive, by all means, it's not a bad deal financially. I just, right. you know, I don't recommend it to the average person right now.
I will say, I mean, for the cost of a single 3 terabyte drive, you can pick up 2 2-terabyte drives and have change left over. Because I mean, literally, we're looking at $100 to $109 for 2 terabyte drives right now in terms of the caviar awesome. Greens, and the blacks aren't that much more expensive. So you can get 4 terabytes for $200, $220, or you can get 3 terabytes for $239 if you can find them for sale. I just want to see. I'm waiting for the ability to build a FreeNAS with 3 terabyte drives. That would make me, or an Unraid box with 3 terabyte drives. That would make me really, really happy.
Nice. So. Let's see. We also new news. If you're 1 year old and you have 240 million licenses sold, you're doing pretty good. That is what has happened with Windows 7 at its 1 year mark today, October 21st. They record this, has more than 240 licenses sold. So it's running on 93% of new consumer PCs, and it now has over 17% of the global operating system market share, according to some net applications companies. So that's, I mean, they compare that to Windows Vista by saying 6 months after launch, 100% of their OEM partners were selling Windows 7. Only 70% were selling Windows Vista. So does this kind of solidify Windows 7 as a success to you, or do you not? I mean, they're building new machines.
I've never questioned that Windows 7 was a success. You know, I know at least one person that's been downgrading their Windows 7 machines to Vista. I think they've lost their mind.
Because
they're claiming that the Windows 7 performance degrades over time. And I'm like, okay, my box just keeps getting faster and faster. But I think they were rebuilding their system so often they kind of crufted it up. I think Windows 7, you know, Vista stayed on absolutely none of my machines, except for the one machine I left it on for testing for Texilla. And Yeah, I think Windows 7 is doing pretty good. You know, I wish they'd skipped Windows ME. I wish they'd skipped Vista.
We don't know. We can ask for success. We can't always ask for everything, I guess, right?
I just want an operating system that doesn't suck, man. And I think with Windows 7, I have that. And apparently 239,999,999 other people or some subset of that with licenses agree. I mean, you're running Windows 7 on all your machines, aren't you?
You know, yes. So the only exception I have is this machine that I work on here. This is my Lenovo X200 laptop. It still has Vista on it. I never bothered to do the Windows 7 upgrade disk type of thing. It was one of those things that's like, I'll just format it one day and I won't worry about it. And I never got around to formatting it. And instead, I'll just end up buying a new notebook, I'm sure. So, but yes, I mean, since the release candidate or since the RTM, I guess, the release to manufacturing, every machine I have built has had Windows 7. We've used Windows 7 since before it was released on our graphics testbed and on our CPU testbed and have had nothing but good experiences with it. So, that's good news.
I just like the idea of buying a new notebook to upgrade your operating system.
Yeah, I have weird PC upgrading habits. Like I have an advantage because I have a lot of PC hardware just kind of sitting around me. But when I want to upgrade my PC, what I actually do is I build a completely new one with a new hard drive, graphics, motherboard, processor, all that kind of stuff. Because I'm afraid if I like think I've backed up everything on that other computer that I'm going to forget something, right? So I always just leave it there. I say I'm going to leave it there for a month, and if I can use the new one for a month and not need anything off that PC, then I know I'm good to go, and I can format that and give it to somebody else or upgrade it and do something else with it. So
I'm kind of bumming on the one-month cap because I had this vision of like this long row of computers going down your work desk, like down to a Pentium 90 in the far corner.
You are spot on there, Patrick. I said that was the goal. I said that was the mentality. But reality, what happens is that computer sits under my desk for all of eternity. And if maybe one day I'll like take pictures and show them on the show. But of each iteration of Ryan's PC as it's gone back, I mean, back to when I had those like those super high towers with a window with the original website logo like etched into the side of it from about 7 years ago and that kind of stuff. That's actually an interesting thing to look at. I'm trying to remember to do that.
Yeah, I purged all the old systems when I moved, minus one that I kept for the case. Speaking of which,
my wife calls me a pack rat. But let's get on to the emails. Enough of that.
Tim writes in, I've got a custom-built PC with an Asus 5P5ND, an Intel Q6600 running at 2.8 gigahertz, 4 gigabytes of OCZ DDR2800 memory, and an NVIDIA GTX 260. I use this computer almost exclusively for gaming and some light photo and document editing. Then I plan on purchasing one of the new 6000 series of AMD Radeon cards, probably their mainstream card. Should I save my money and build a new PC, or do you think that an overclocked Q6600 is plenty for gaming? I tend to get mixed answers around the net. You're at this point, you kind of want to keep your performance, your GPU and your CPU in sync. I'm thinking that your GPU at this point is going to outclass your CPU, not by a huge amount, but it's definitely going to outclass your CPU.
Yeah, I agree. It's the Radeon 6000 series, depending on what, if he's buying his mainstream card, it's not going to mean the mainstream card is going to be the high performance card of last generation. So that's generally like the rule of thumb. The Q6600 is getting a little bit long in the tooth. He's running it at 2.8 gigahertz. I would say, I think the default on that is like 2.66 or 2.67 or something like that.
That sounds about right.
I would say I would keep it. Here's my general rule of thumb. It's like if you're going to buy it, if you're going to buy a whole new system or upgrade one component, upgrade that one component. And then if you're still not happy with it, then buy the whole rest of all the rest of the components you're going to need. But you still have that graphics card already anyway. So why not have that attempt at a cheaper upgrade? I think if he took that Q6600, maybe bought a better cooler. If he's running a stock cooler, overclock it to like 3.4, 3.5 gigahertz. You can do that easily on air, right?
Yeah.
And then buy that 6000 series card or whichever GPU you want. And I think that processor will still be good for gaming. There are some games now that are coming out. Civ 5 being an example. There's a new Total War game coming out. That's another example of ones that are heavily multi-threaded. They can take advantage of eight threads and that kind of thing of on a CPU. But there's not a lot of them.
Yeah, I think by this time next year, I think it'll definitely be time for a CPU upgrade. I mean, Samurai 2, the Total War game you mentioned,
yeah,
they're doing 3D rendering of something like 56,000 characters simultaneously in the full battle scenes. Because you basically have eight fiefdoms warring over 16th century feudal Japan, and that's going to be ridiculously painful depending on how high your settings are. And this is a turn-based strategy game, and they're like, we're rendering up to 56,000 individual. It's like, are you cool?
That's kind of crazy. But I was using Civ 5 for testing the Radeon 6000 cards, and it turns out the majority of the time you are CPU limited in that game. But that's a very, very specific instance. Bad Company 2, you don't need to worry about that. Left 4 Dead 2, you don't need to worry about that. I mean, there's all kinds of games where I think a Q6600 would probably be more than just fine. We got another email here from Adam about the long, slow upgrade process. This is an interesting one. He says, just started listening to the show, instantly hooked. That's good news. I am short of money in abundance at the moment and was thinking about keeping my building spark going, but slowly. Is it a bad idea to build a PC over a long period of time? Example, is it a bad idea to buy a part a month every few months? Will I find that by the end of the build, I'm already outdated? I'm not talking years, but I'm talking over a 6 to 12 month period. Is there any do's or don'ts when prolonging a build? Thanks heaps. Awesome show.
Oh, boy. You've heard me say this before. I'm going to say it again. You wait 6 months, you get more graphics card for less money. You wait 12 months, you get more CPU, more motherboard, more memory, more graphics card, and more hard drive for less money. If you have an existing system and you're sitting there like, okay, I'm going to upgrade the hard drive and the GPU, and then I'm going to replace the motherboard, the CPU, and the memory, that's one thing. If you're sitting there like, I'm going to build a PC and I'm going to build it piece by piece, save your pennies. Buy all the parts in 12 months. It's not like you're building a vintage Mustang. You know what I mean? A vintage Mustang, it's like, oh my goodness, the suspension I want is on sale. And oh, that's a great deal on a 302. And hey, they've got a, you know what I mean? Like the vintage Mustang parts, you know, you find a deal. It's probably still going to be a deal in a year. You buy a GPU today, in 12 months, you're going to be like, I could have gotten twice the performance for half the price. Or you're going to be like, I could have gotten next generation Intel CPU, or I could have bought the one I bought today for like 40% less because there's new Intel CPU releases.
I was reading these questions over earlier, and the way I thought about it is very similar. I mean, you're 100% right. Think of it as if you're just talking about like investing money, right? So save that money instead of buying it and holding it. I know his goal here is to keep the building spark going, but save that money and instead of bearing interest in a savings account where you're gathering the value of that, consider what you're bearing instead of interest is the improvements in computing performance that will happen over that year of saving that money. Yeah. So it's, if you're going to save $600, right? If you save that $600 over the course of a year, you know, then you buy $600 worth of stuff. That $600 worth of computing hardware is more powerful than the $600 worth of stuff you would have bought 12 months ago. So it's like magic.
It's like getting 50% more for the same amount of money.
Exactly. I agree. Don't recommend buying it as you go. So
yeah, it's tempting, right? Because you can watch this little pile of parts building in the corner of your house, and in a year you're going to be like, crap, if I'd bought these three things now instead of 6 months ago, everything would be better. You picked a crazy question from Steve. He says, I'm a video editing hobbyist and I want to put together the best dedicated video editing machine I can for $1,000. He's looking to upgrade from Premiere CS4 to CS5. Option one, I have the opportunity to purchase a secondhand three-year-old server class unit with specs including dual Xeon 5080 3.373 gigahertz CPUs, 32 gigabytes of RAM, a 128 megabyte Quadro FX 550, four 10K 300 gigabyte drives in a RAID 0, plus a 500 gigabyte SATA boot drive. This seems like a sweet deal to me, he says, question mark. Option two, I could buy a new system with current hardware for $1,000. The sheer size of the server is prohibitive, plus the noise, heat, and power consumption. Given that I don't need the software, displays, or peripherals, does current equipment beat the old server for grunt? If so, what are your recommendations? Where do we start?
That's actually not bad hardware for the server for $1,000. The Xeon 5080 is a dual core hyper threaded part, so it's
right.
So it'd be 8 threads total in this platform. 32 gigs of RAM is obviously a ton of memory. The 128 meg Quadro FX 550 is, I'm gonna say, excuse me, at this point, is almost a throwaway product.
Yeah, I was going to say dated at best.
Yeah, 128 megs of memory on a graphics card is like 0 megs of memory on a graphics card today. The 10K SAS drives, those are actually nice. The 10,000 RPM SAS drives, 500, you know, I mean, the 500 gig drive, that's like $30 at this point, you know, $60 or something.
They're awesome as long as they don't crash.
Right. Yeah,
especially in a striped RAID 0.
I mean, he said like, I think I cut this part out of the email, but it's a large server. It's loud. It's hot. He had complaint. He was worried about where he would place this machine and all that kind of things. Those kinds of things as well. And I kind of thought he answered his own question there by getting into these kind of other complications with this hardware. It's impressive looking hardware by spec,
right?
But CS5, since he's specified he's using Premiere CS5, or wants to use Premiere CS5, you need to really utilize all the way, you need to have one of these NVIDIA Quadro graphics cards. And unfortunately, that Quadro FX 550 is not going to cut it.
Right.
Most of the time, you know, the Quadro cards that you're going to want to buy to support those features are going to be that $1,000, unfortunately. So, you know, you can get a GTX. Look at the Adobe CS5 web pages. They have updated the list of graphics cards, of NVIDIA graphics cards that will run the Mercury playback engine in CS5, which is really, really awesome for video editors. I'm kind of tempted to say, get this sweet server, but be prepared to spend a little bit more money to get the graphics cards you need. But I really, really deep down, I think the smarter idea is to go with the build something new for $1,000.
Yeah, build something new, or you know, if you don't feel like building it, you know, take a look at the specs on like the Dell Studio XPS 7100 and the. I know I'm not supposed to talk about buying pre-built systems on Twitch, but man, sometimes you just look at the prices they're getting on parts, and it's kind of hard not to. I mean.
Yeah,
Core i7-930 with 8 megabytes of cache, which is going to do awesome, awesome things for your disk access, and a 64-bit copy of Windows 7, and oh, look at that, like 4 gigabytes of dual-channel DDR3, and, you know, a pretty fast hard drive that's not going to run you the risk of having a giant RAID 0 puke all over your latest rendering project. You know, I'm sitting here, and it's like, you know, for $200 you can get 9 gigabytes of tri-channel DDR3 SD RAM, which will be something that will probably make CS5 super happy. Yeah, I'm the server sounds cool, and 32 gigabytes of RAM sounds awesome, but I've been in an office where somebody had the giant, you know, R2-D2 dog house sized server there, and it sucks, especially if there's anything that resembles summer where you live. I'm voting for, you know, Core i7, a minimum of 4 gigabytes RAM, preferably as much RAM as you can afford, nice, you know, 1 terabyte hard drive, better yet an SSD, and just roll with it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you can still go the build your own route. If you go to PCPer.com, go to the hardware leaderboard. We have a system that starts at $867. That's a Core i5 quad-core processor that I was able to overclock up to 4.8 gigahertz pretty much without even trying. I would upgrade the graphics card on it. It's only got 4 gigs of memory. I think if you're working with HD video and Premiere, you should definitely have 8, you know. But, you know, get rid of the sound card that's on there. That's $75. You don't need that for a video editing machine, and go from there. I mean, there's a lot of different options, but I would be hesitant to take somebody else's old hardware.
Yeah, especially loud, old, ridiculous, power-consuming hardware that's probably going to cost you a bloody fortune to replace the power supply if it goes. Would you go with dual-channel or tri-channel for the DDR memory on a system build at this point?
I'd probably still do the dual channel. I don't, because when you do the triple channel, you have to go up to the different motherboard class and all that kind of stuff that right. I don't think is really necessary.
Good to
Either
know.
Either way, we've got an email from RX Killer says, like to thank you guys for all you do, the question asking public. not a problem. This is my favorite part. He says, my girlfriend and I both listen to the show. Which is awesome, I guess. All the time. And Patrick's story of his Burnmaster 3000 got us talking about the possibility of making our own. You see, I'm kind of a pack rat, and I have 3 IDE DVD drives from old desktops, as well as an old floppy drive. See where I'm going with this? I also have 2 1 gigs of RAM from a laptop that I upgraded just a few months ago, as well as 3.5-inch Barracuda drive I salvaged out of an old Mac. Is there a motherboard out there that will take that RAM as well as allow me to plug in all 3 DVD drives in the IDE drive, preferably more? Or am I SOL? If said motherboard exists, then I assume I can just pick up a cheap case and power supply. I hope you guys can help. That memory is not going to work in any motherboard, right? So the memory you took out of the laptop is... maybe 99% chance that 99.99% chance that it's not going to work in any motherboards you can buy because it's so dead memory. It's a different form factor.
Yeah. I mean, there's desktops like when you look at a desktop that's built into a monitor, like those are actually notebook. Those are actually notebook motherboards that are sort of glued onto the back of the monitor. But if you have something that'll use the SODIMM, it's not going to have the right ports for a 3.5-inch hard drive.
It's also not going to have, he's asking for 4 IDE connections.
Yeah.
3 IDE drives, optical drives, and an IDE Barracuda drive. Look, today you're lucky to have 1 IDE connection on a motherboard. Getting 2 is really a stretch that you need 2 to have master slave for 4 drives.
If you can find an older PC, your basic side of the road, Goodwill, somebody selling $100 machines from an upgrade in an office, where it's like a Pentium 4 class processor or one of the higher Celerons, it's probably going to have the IDE connections for everything else. The RAM's a throwaway, dude. That's $25 worth of RAM and just give up on it.
Yeah, I think the answer here is it's not going to be, you can probably do it. It's not going to be as easy as you were hoping. Based on all the hardware you had laying around. There you go.
Actually, what it could do is see if anybody still sells, and they're really hard to find. It's hard to find SATA external drive enclosures, but if you could find an older IDE external drive enclosure, where basically like they usually call them like duplicating enclosures or something like that. They sell for anywhere from like $65 to $150. If you could find an older one, maybe on eBay or something, it takes the IDE drives. I mean, the problem is like, it's like I love recycling old hardware, but you're talking about, buying 3 SATA drives that'll work with any system that's out today, for $20 a piece, probably getting better ripping performance off of it. I'd look for an older system to kind of drop everything into. Keep an eye on Craigslist or the local sales for, if there's a local vendor that does resales of corporate PCs. Should we close on Dan's question about the SSDs and older MacBook Pros and push off Felix's $250 hardware upgrade?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
Okay. So Dan emailed in about he's got an older MacBook Pro. And we had a couple, 3 questions about this. Basically, people with older notebooks asking about SSDs. He says that I've got a 1.5 gigabit motherboard, complete specs below. Would replacing my 7200 RPM hard drive with a solid state drive make a noticeable performance increase? If so, where would it be most notable? And is it worth it? Or should I wait until I buy a new MacBook Pro and go solid state then? Boot up time.
Boot up time. application load time. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you will see big improvements in. I mean, right. Moving data around and that kind of stuff. If you actually do that on your laptop for some reason, if you move it from one partition to another, will be significantly faster and all that kind of stuff as well. Right. But I don't. I mean, I love SSDs. I'm a huge proponent of SSDs. And again, this kind of goes back to that whole, should I upgrade my GPU or wait and just build a whole new computer, right? So his options are buy an SSD, will I see speed improvements that are worth it? Or do I wait, buy a new MacBook Pro and just get an SSD then? And it just seems to make sense to me. If you're going to buy an SSD anyway, mm-hmm. I would almost always not recommend getting the SSD that Apple or any OEM vendor would provide to you in a notebook. And instead, just like, you know, buy an Intel drive, buy an OCZ Vertex drive, buy a Corsair mm-hmm. Force drive, whichever one you want to get, and try it out. And then if you're not happy with it and you think what I really need is a faster computer to take advantage of this SSD, then, you know, go buy your new MacBook Pro and you've still got that SSD that you can put in that new system. I think you'll see a difference. Even, you know, the 1.5 gigabit per second limit is really a limit of data transfer speed.
Right.
So that's like if you're moving a large file from one place to the other, right? That's the limit that you probably hit with some of the higher end SSDs. But the access time improvements that equate to loading up a lot of small files very quickly, which is what mm-hmm. is usually happening when you open up Firefox, you open up Chrome or Safari right. or iLife or iPhoto or whatever other apps they have on Apple Macs. You know, those happen much, much quicker with an SSD.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those are my experiences. So,
and the thing is, though, if you're the kind of person who, like, you start up your MacBook and you have a copy of Word and like 18 browser windows, and maybe you edit some small photos and you leave everything up and running for a week at a pop before rebooting, I don't mm-hmm. think you're going to notice as much improvement. If you do, you know, video editing or large photos, audio files, where you're constantly saving huge amounts of data, I think it's where it's most noticeable. But if you're generally kind of like, yeah, I work in a spreadsheet and I have some browser windows open, unless you restart your notebook every single day or a couple times a day, I don't think you're going to notice the SSD as much. Just as having actually dropped a SSD into an older notebook, you know, there's certain areas where it's very noticeable. And if you do a lot of sort of like, you know, mundane computing, the SSD is not going to be as beneficial sure. as if you're constantly opening and closing stuff, if you're working with large file sizes, then the SSD drive really, really starts, excuse me, the SSD, the solid state drive, not the solid state drive, really starts to shine.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, to me, I have an SSD in all my not honestly all my notebooks, but the MacBook Pro that we do this video source from for this show, the machine that I use all the time, just doing things like waking up from a hibernation is noticeably faster with an SSD as well. Hibernation is different than suspend. Hibernation copies all the contents of your system memory to the hard drive, and then it physically turns everything off. And
then hibernation is a lot more practical with an SSD than it does with a traditional
hard drive. It doesn't take 20 minutes when you can just boot up instead.
Exactly.
So copying all that stuff back from the disk or back from the SSD to the memory is significantly faster there. So I mean, I think there are a lot of advantages. It's still pretty expensive when people see what, you know, how much you have to pay for 120 gigs or, you know, 128 or 160 gigs worth of hard drive. And it's, you know, it's hard to argue with that type of mentality.
Yeah.
But I'd say especially if your notebook's not storing all your photos and your music and your videos on it, then you probably don't have to worry about your capacity issue there. So.
Yeah, but you're looking at like a 500 gigabytes, you know, rotating media drive. Winchester drive is going to be like half the price or a third of the price of a 128 gigabyte SSD. So right. Be prepared for some minor sticker shock.
Yes, indeed.
So, Ryan, like 15 minutes, you're off to do something exciting at PCPer.com. What is it?
We are going to be publishing our review of the new AMD Radeon HD 6870 and 6850 graphics card. So if you're downloading this, chances are it's already up. You can go to PCPer.com and check it out. See how it compares to the EVGA or the EVGA, the NVIDIA GTX 460 line of graphics cards.
Very nice.
Do you have any interesting projects going on your end at TechZilla or HD Nation?
We just got our first Google TV device in the house, which is posting up, basically taking it. You know what? I probably can't even say that much about it, even though some people are posting the reviews already. Let's just say Google TV reviews are coming next week. We talk about cracking BIOS passwords on the Techzilla that just posted today at techzilla.com. And we have Sasha Sagan, who's an amazing cell phone expert, talking about the Windows Phone 7 operating system. And I was actually surprised at his opinion about Microsoft's latest effort to crack the Android and Google code. It was also interesting to talk to him about Steve Jobs slagging on Android and RIM and everybody else in the industry. So if you're a big cell phone fan, it's a good episode. Or if you're kind of thinking about buying a new smartphone, it's a good episode of Techzilla to check out.
Very cool.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that is it, I believe, for this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware.